On this week's Big Tech Show, when will cars safely drive themselves on our streets? And who in Ireland is providing the technology to help them do that? We talk to one of the country's biggest automotive autonomy entrepreneurs.
I have BMW Drive Assist in my own vehicle, and it is much, much safer because we are all prone to distraction, especially when we're on the motorway from Limerick to Dublin, for example. We've all been there where you actually forgot a whole section of the road. So I would say if you take it from a safety perspective, and it does allow you to kind of relax.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave, 1919, 1920. There's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel. This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Left Wing. Well, from that high of that win over Wales 2 weeks ago for Ireland in the Women's Six Nations to the absolute low of that demolition at Twickenham, England crushed Ireland 88 points to 10 on Saturday. Ireland are back down to fifth in the table going into the final round of games this weekend. I'm Sinead Kazan and I'm joined by Ali Donnelly and Anna Capeless. Ali, like myself, you were at Twickenham on Saturday. It was just jaw-dropping what we saw on the pitch.
Yeah, I think it was a reminder of a few things. One is England have gone up a level during the course of this tournament and the way in which they're attacking. I don't think we've seen them attack like this really for a very long time. And it all came together. You know, we talked a bit about how big and wide that pitch was. It was also dry. It was all sort of set up for them to put on a display like that. And the second thing, you know, we won't have time to really get into this too much today, but you are seeing a bit of the kind of legacy of the mismanagement of this Irish programme over a number of years. And that's going to take a while to shake out. And I think, you know, a good reality check on how far we have to go. If I were them, I'd barely even look at that match now. I'd just focus on Scotland. We'll come back to that another day. But, you know, someone asked me, I went to the pub afterwards, you know, did you watch the game? And I sort of said, well, every time I looked up, England scored. But, you know, yeah, I did watch the game a little bit through my hands.
Yeah. Anna, what were your thoughts watching it?
Yeah, similar. It's just such a, you know, really brought back down to earth a little bit, especially after the high of last week. It's kind of a similar pattern that Scotland had, you know, where they were on a nice run and then they were, you know, thrashed not as much by England, because I do think England were keeping, you know, what they saved their best performance for Twickenham, obviously, so far anyway. But Scotland were able to regroup, and I think Ireland are going to just have to do the same. It's just disappointing, the margin, the amount of tries that were scored, although it seemed to be very entertaining and people were like loving the amount of tries that were scored from an England side. Just the scoreline was just so disappointing to really like look at afterwards, like, wow, was it really, you know, is it really that much? And is that really on paper the difference? Does that represent the difference in the levels of where we're at? So I think I agree with Ali. Roll it up, throw it in the bin. Can we, like, all is not lost either. It just, again, just reemphasizes what our ambition is. And the ambition isn't to, you know, to beat England yet. And I do, just with a score like that, I'm like, when will this stop? I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking the exact same thing. When are we going to see Ireland being competitive again with England in the Six Nations? So we're not going to bin this performance just yet. We're going to get into it. So 14 tries scored by England, the highest points total England have ever scored against Ireland. It just missed that record winning margin over Ireland by a point from 2002. 6 tries in the first half, 8 in the second. Ellie Kildon and Abby Daw with hat-tricks. Kildon, obviously, she's just player elect of the Six Nations, isn't she? And it's like she just floats. It's like minimum of movement and she just goes around the place. But for Ireland, 61 tackles missed. I honestly don't think I can remember seeing a team cut apart a team as easily and as much as England did. to Ireland. Ali, we talked about the improvements in the defence on last year for that game against France, but this was just a complete systems failure on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to describe it. We looked completely overwhelmed. You know, some really fundamental basics disappeared. If you remember the second try that Mo Hunt scored, there were no guards at the ruck. You know, stuff that you learn very early doors when you're learning how to put a defensive system together. So to be fair, England were coming at them with such ferocity, at such pace, with such width. I think we just kind of, you know, as I say, looked a little overwhelmed. And I think the real disappointing thing about the defence is how much kind of simple first-up tackling was missed. You know, I think there's a couple of players, you know, Lauren Delaney might be one of them, who might never want to look back at that match again, because there were a couple of one-on-ones which you would expect international players to be making those tackles. And maybe, you know, Anna, you know, when New Zealand were at their pump, I remember people would say when you know, the match was lost before you played New Zealand, because you'd look up and see this line of black jerseys. I think the same is true of England now. People are very nervous of them. We saw it with Scotland when Scotland went into the England game on a good little run, great win, very good performance against France. They didn't win and were terrible against England, and we're good again this weekend. So I think there is a bit of mental fragility against England when you go in, and in particular, I think Anna's right. They saved their best performance for Twickenham, but they also wanted to put their best showing out there before the France game, put their best team together and really try to see those things click. I spent like an hour and a half talking to Lou Meadows, the attack coach for England, the other night, and you know, you could sense this was coming, and it was a shame it was against us. But yeah, some of those first up tackles, really disappointing. Some basic fundamentals went missing, and I think the team just looked totally lost when England came at them with such pace.
I completely agree with everything there, and I see that like England do need to, the difficult thing for England is they have to win this World Cup next year. I want them to win. I think most people in rugby want them to win. I wanted them to win the last World Cup because I wanted everyone to be like, okay, this is what needs to be done in women's rugby to win a World Cup. And that, you know, the thing is, the Six Nations isn't a wonderful prep for that, because there's no match where they get really under pressure. So they've got to find kind of ways to, you know, not just turn up, maul over and job done. You know, I think they've learned from those errors as well, that they need to find something different in themselves as well, which, you know, up till last week, England had like the highest penalty count in the tournament. It's obvious that they're trying to find new things about themselves. They have to. They need to do that. That's what they need to use Six Nations for, because realistically, there's only one team that could maybe push them and put them under pressure. So they've got to find their own ways of trying that. And it proved to have worked anyway, at least versus Ireland. And, you know, let's see. I reckon they'll just kind of continue with this hype next week. But, you know, you're talking about someone like Lauren Delaney, who, you know, plays in Sale Sharks, plays in the same league as all of these English players who all play in the Premiership. The difference in mentality in, you know, playing for your club, and then going into an Irish shirt versus an English shirt, like the mentality around that is challenging as well. Like, you might have no fear of these players when you're in club, but then when they come into their English environment, which is what they're striving for, and you're in your Irish environment, you know that's been under pressure, and it's just so different. And like, if that was, you know, if they were in their club jerseys, would you have seen, you know, the same kind of errors? I don't think so. Obviously Twickenham as well, and obviously the wider pitch, and obviously England had found this, you know, anytime an Irish player went to slow down the ball, which was obviously one of their, you know, tactics, let's try and slow down the ball. As soon as a player went in, England knew, they spotted it and they said out the back, and they were able to manipulate the defence on the outside like every time. So The worrying thing is that it wasn't adaptable then from an Irish side. They just kept doing the same thing then, and it just kept opening up for England. So there's a lot to look at there in detail.
Yeah, actually, that came up afterwards, Ali, like Dylan McMahon saying they were trying to solve the problems, all on the run, something along that lines, but it didn't, you know, it didn't come to fruition. I mean, you know, and Scott Beaman didn't make changes kind of even at halftime early in the second half, quicker than we would have seen. But we didn't see those problems. We didn't see them try to contain them even in the second half. I mean, that was when they scored 8 more tries.
Yeah, and I think you could see the naivety perhaps in our game plan, but also in our experience and our inability to adapt. So I'll give you a good example of, you know, I put my head in my hands when this happened. Just before half time, the clock's in red. Dan O'Brien gets the ball, just kick the ball off the park. We've already leaked 5-6 tries, get into the change. She keeps the ball alive. Ellie Kildon recycles it. They score. Luckily, it was brought back for a forward pass, but it was just like, sort of needless naivety, you know what I mean? Not needless naivety, but needless play because we are a bit naive. And I'm, to be honest, I actually don't think there are many teams who could have lived with England on Saturday. I really don't. I mean, we haven't seen enough of New Zealand to know. We'll find out about France next week. But the way in which they're playing, changing their first receivers, playing it out the back, they've got unbelievable pace out wide. I mean, you know, Katie Corrigan was beaten on several foot races and she's not slow. So I think they just have the tools in their armory are just way beyond where we're at right now. And it was all compounded by some poor decision making and inability through our inexperience to be able to adjust. But I wouldn't be, if Ireland sitting despondent today, I don't think anyone would have beaten them. In playing in that way, in that fashion, with that crowd, we just need to think that we've got a huge, huge game against Scotland this weekend. Let's look at the Scotland game, pick out a couple of things from Ireland that we could do a bit better and move on, because England are just another level.
Yeah, that is a good point. I was thinking that because it did all come together for England. I mean, this was their day, 49,000. It was a great atmosphere even beforehand there, you know, even though there was no jeopardy in the game because, you know, the way it went. But, you know, would you agree with that, Anna, that, you know, hypothetical question, I know it's hard to say, like, would the likes of, Scotland, Italy have been, you know, would England have done that to any other team last Saturday, just the way it all came together for them, particularly, obviously, in their attack?
Well, if you look at last year's fixture, it was very much the same. It was very exciting. It was a world record attendance for a women's game, which they achieved and they did really well. It was against France. So it was a different kind of match because France is the team who could push this England side. And last year they did. And I think we would have been saying the same things about England last year, about how good they were playing. I wouldn't have backed anyone against England last year, but it is true. And like, credit to England, they actually have found this extra level in how they're playing again, despite being so much better than everyone else. They've been able to find it again. So, you know, whether it was something like, you know, France coming back into the game last year because England kind of found themselves a little bit complacent, maybe they learned from that as well. I don't think France this year at the same level. So I think the answer is no. I don't think anyone would have. But we said the same last year. I wouldn't have backed France to come so close to England last year in Twickenham either. But, you never know.
I think you could say, though, on that, I agree that the scoreline would have been less against a smarter tactical team because we kicked far too often and too long to two of the best three players in the world at the moment. I think Abby Dow and Ellie Kildon. I mean, Ellie Kildon is sensational this year. I mean, there was a 9-year-old behind me and one of my friend's daughters, and she said, "I want to be Ellie Kildon." And I just thought that was magic, right? That's what this is all about. But I think, yes, all the other teams would have lost to them, but it might have been a 60-point, you know, to 10 game. We did make it harder for ourselves too with some poor decisions.
Yeah, Ellie, she did an interview last week where she said she wants to be the best player in the world, like male or female. Like, I just love her attitude. But you mentioned there, Ali, about the legacy, and it is continuing to haunt Irish rugby. You know, David Humphreys is in there now as the new IRFU performance director. The women's game has to be a top concern. I mean, we can only just get briefly into this, but like, we know how much Irish rugby is playing catch up, but you know, that was some gut check. You know, if you were writing an open letter to David Humphreys, what would be top theme?
Yeah, I think there's two things, and we're seeing it with Wales too, by the way, who are having similar challenges. One is, if you're going to invest in contracts and then take that top down approach, that's fine. That's fine. That's your decision to take. That environment has to be the best high performance environment that you can create and you can build, and making sure that is actually there. The second thing is, and I think that we have been guilty of this, and I think Wales are definitely guilty of this, dropping in contracts and perhaps thinking that's enough. And actually, you know, there has to be a bottom up approach to all of this. And, you know, I know it's early days in that Celtic Challenge Cup, but really, really thinking and being open and communicative and transparent about what our plan is to make sure the pipeline of talent coming through the pathways is enough, right? So, you know, it's not just enough to pay contracts. That was just about keeping and holding on to the coattails, right? The rest of it has now come to fruition. And we see that at Wales, who, that's all they've done, right? We at least are, you know, investing a little bit more in terms of strategy. And think people might not agree with the way that we're doing it, but we are actually thinking about strategy underneath the national team. Wales have done very little but drop in contracts, and it just isn't enough because of the way other teams are evolving and moving forward. So I think it's good that David Humphreys is there and has started, because I think he will take, I hope, a more kind of holistic approach to developing the 15s game. And look, this is a team with a big future ahead of it. It's just that actually everyone's moving at the same pace. So there's a lot more to do than just pay players. And they only get paid a small amount of money, of course. It's not a silver bullet.
Yeah, and this Six Nations has been really interesting, especially with Wales. It's just been such a, you know, the conversation that we've had the last year is, are there going to be contracts? What are they going to look like? What? And, you know, Wales seem to have really like, okay, we're going to sort this out now. And then it just goes to show exactly as Ali says, you can't just drop money in and be like, phew, well done, everybody. That's enough now. Like, no, it's not enough. Like, there has to be just, you know, so much homework done. Like, as we can see, like those contracts that are still in place, they're still from before Scott Beaman's time. So I hope, you know, I'm sure he is like planning along with the, you know, the big management team around him that we've seen and we've liked, and their management side is growing all the time, that they're just demanding the best, you know, constantly, and that the, you know, the management and the players are all on the same page and all looking for the same thing, and that there's scouting going on, that they're down at the AIL games, that there's always this presence of, you know, Irish coaches coming to watch league games. I'm still, again, like Ali says, not everyone agrees with the whole, you know, how we're playing before we get to Ireland in terms of like using the Celtic Challenge Cup, because ideally that would have been, you know, that's good for the younger players, and what can you give those kind of players in the middle? Like, it's not attractive enough for the girls to come back from England yet. And I don't know how long that's going to take either. Like, what would it take for the likes of, you know, Sam and Tricky and Lauren and all those girls like to turn around and be like, actually, now is a good time to come home? There's a lot of work to go in before any of those girls are going to say that.
I mean, even we were talking beforehand, Anna, like the women's AIL final on Sunday, the day after, like the final women's Six Nations game. I mean, we look and see how much the WPR in England is working, like, and we have our showcase Irish Day the day after the women's Six Nations.
Yeah, it's a bit crazy, isn't it? Like, you know, the AIL final, at least it used to be, and people always asked me, you know, when I moved from the AIL to the Premiership, like, oh, wow, is it this massive step up? And I never thought it was, because the system we had in Bowes was excellent, because we had an academy, it was the closest thing I ever got to that was when I moved to Harlequins finally, in you know, as the Premiership started to turn more professional. So it's, you know, the AIL, people are like, oh, you know, the AIL, it has to be done through the provinces, but the AIL was like ready made with these academies on the men's AIL side of things that were like feeding into the women's side of things. Like, Bowes had such a brilliant model that I just wanted to be replicated in so many other places because I found it excellent. And then like, you look now, and then the you know, the AIL final, like the pinnacle of what women's rugby used to be in Ireland, is happening the day after the final game. I find that a little bit heartbreaking, because the AIL is so close to my heart, and obviously it's not the route that they've chosen to like boost the game, and I feel particularly sad about that. But you know, I'm going to trust in, you know, the provincial side of things. It's just a little bit harder to you know, bring everyone together across a province. You know, you have to make people professional if you're going to like really invest in that. And that's, oh, there's so many different ways of you know, pulling it apart. But, you know, one thing to look at, that the AIL is the day after this final game of Six Nations, is sad.
I always find this hard to debate, because I don't think I know of an IRFU official who has sat down and laid out the strategy publicly. And, you know, you often get the phone call from the RFU or a text to say that was really harsh, or, and it's like, what am I supposed to do? You're not communicating any of this stuff with us. So I think it is clearer now, to be fair, than it was even a year ago, that the AIL is not considered the kind of the route to develop elite players. And if that's the decision, that's fine. Let's just make sure the provincial setup and the Celtic Challenge is as professional as it can be. And I think the frustration sometimes is that it isn't, and it's not quite clear. But I think there's a lot of need now from an Ireland perspective for that Celtic challenge to expand and be taken very seriously by Wales and Scotland, because it is now becoming, and Scott Beaman said this, it's becoming a very important, if not the most important, preparation route for the Irish players. So, you know, I'm really interested in what happens at Wales. I think if Wales got their act together, I mean, it's mind-blowing to me that 95-98% of their players don't play in Wales. I just think that's unsustainable and crazy, frankly. But I think if they were to do something to bring some of those players back into that system, that would be great for us too. But just a bit of clarity around what the overall strategy is. And, you know, the AIL, you still need a thriving grassroots league, right? So that's the kind of bottom-up approach we talked about. I mean, I haven't played in the AIL for a really long time, but it has always struggled to really kind of own its place and find its place in Ireland because of the way in which the provincial kind of structure came in and out. So, yeah, I'd love it if, you know, Sinead, maybe you can sit down with David Humphreys and do a big set piece interview in a few months' time and just kind of lay this all out there so we can just kind of move on with this debate.
Absolutely. That invite is there, David, if you're listening. And best of luck actually as well. Best of luck to Railway and UL Bose in that final on Sunday. Just going back to the game, lads. As I said there, Scott Beaman did make some changes quite early. Eve Higgins was taken off at halftime. Neve Jones was taken off soon into the second half as well. And he mentioned there how quickly Ireland will need to bin this, you know. But is that easier said than done, considering the nature of the defeat, Anna?
Yeah, the problem is the nature of the defeat, because I keep looking at Scotland and like, okay, Scotland were able to regroup and they seem to, you know, bin it and take their positives and run around and beat Italy. The nature of it, maybe it becomes even easier to bin because of the nature of it, because you just don't want to think about it at all. Like, what do you say when you turn up? Do you just, you know, turn up to the first meeting? Do you just go, right, Scotland? You know, maybe that is the right way to go, because they can continue with the same, you know, this whole not seeing much in attack because we kick it so often. You know, even we had discussed this. We were like, oh no, that's not going to work against England. But then they did it anyway. So maybe they weren't even considering England at all and just have their thoughts on Scotland the whole time and didn't want to deviate from that game plan because that's what they know they're going to use next week. I don't know. It's hard to know, but I think next week's going to be a brilliant game.
Mm, yeah, and just the kickoffs for that final Saturday. So Wales against Italy at 12:15, Ireland against Scotland at 2:30, France against England in Bordeaux at 4:45. We'll get onto that in a second, Ali, because I know you'll be in Bordeaux for that one. But as you said there, like Anna, you know, Scotland showed that they were able to bounce back from their 46-0 defeat to England in Edinburgh by getting that first win in Italy. So, Ali, they really do, Scotland, have the momentum coming into this one.
Yeah, they do. And they look full value for being in third place at the moment. I watched their game late last night on playback. I think, it was a tight game and it took a moment of brilliance from Chloe Raleigh to try and, you know, push them out ahead. But I think they're a very good team. They look very together. They have been through bad times as a group and they've come out the other side of that and they know how to win now. So I think they'll be dangerous coming over. I think the one thing you could say is what they've struggled with in all of their games is to convert chances. They've had lots of opportunities. They've had loads of opportunities to beat France, frankly, and didn't do it. Against Italy, at one point I thought, God, they're going to throw this away, and they didn't. So you know, they can see games out, but they create lots of opportunities. They don't finish them all, and I think it'll be a very evenly contested game. And I think, you know, Fihéz and I were texting last night and saying, she said, this is the best round of the championship because all the games are going to be competitive, and she's right. And this is right up there. I mean, to your point, Anna, about I don't know. I've never been an elite athlete, so I don't know about the mental, how you can put something to bed and move on. But the one thing I'd be saying to Ireland is, you are better than that, because you have shown much better defensive potential than that in the France game or attacking game against Wales. It's just, they're inexperienced. They haven't pulled it together. They were totally blown away, overwhelmed by a brilliant England team. You know, a couple of clips maybe and move on. And I think if we play to our best, like we did against Wales, this is going to be a great game, because actually, we're quite a similar team to Scotland. We, you know, in those outside spaces, I hope that Eve Higgins does play, because I think her against Emma Orr has been one of the brilliant standouts for Scotland. That's a great battle. They're very similar players. So we're quite similar teams. It could be quite a fun game if we're not in our heads too much with a hangover from Twickenham.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, looking at how close we came to beating Italy, And then looking at how close Italy came to beating Scotland. And I actually think, Ali, you're right, like they almost threw it away. And if it wasn't for Italy's poor set piece, which I actually think Ireland, you know, maybe not perfect, but I do think that they'll have to do a better job than Italy, let's say, like take those chances, because, you know, Italy had a platform and they just couldn't use it because they've got such dangerous, like, attacking back. They've got to make sure that their set piece is, this has to be the best performance now, line out and scrum performance next weekend. And actually there's a chance, because again, looking back on kind of like two rounds ago when Scotland came to Belfast in the final round 2 years ago, Scotland had the momentum then too. And Ireland won. So I do think Scotland are a little bit scared of Ireland. So I actually think it's winnable. But again, that kind of hangs on Scotland's approach to the game and how they defended really well. Their defense was brilliant. So let's see. And Fihéz is right. Yeah, she usually is. It's going to be the best round of the championship, I think.
Okay, well, before we get on to predictions for that game, Ali, you're going to be in Bordeaux. I mean, France against England. Wow, what an occasion that's going to be. Like, surely England just win this one.
On paper and on current performance, yes. But it's a 35,000 capacity. It'll probably be full. And it's France. And the thing about France this year is, I honestly don't think they've been great. They, against Wales, I mean, on paper, they trashed Wales yesterday, 40-0. But really, they picked off a couple of terrible passes and they executed a couple of good moves. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't have to work very hard to get that win. It wasn't a brilliant game, actually. But what's interesting, I don't know, Anne, if you've been watching them, I've been looking at their interviews and watching them after games. They celebrate every game as if they won 100-0. They seem to be really together. They sing and they dance. They mess around with each other. They're all backing the coaches publicly and saying, you know, they're trying to get us to play this new style of rugby. So they're not as good as England on current performance on the park, but they have got a togetherness that I haven't seen in a while in a French team, and they're going to be in front of a big home crowd. I suspect as the game goes on, I'm not sure they live with England's attacking game, but it's France in France. It's been a long time since they've won this tournament, so who knows? I mean, England will be favourites, of course, and I expect England to win, but it's going to be fun.
I've been loving seeing that, actually. You know, this warm-up that they're doing, like, with the speaker and, like, they dance to the music. Like, it's kind of like the stuff you do at sevens tournaments, you know, to get the energy up. And actually, I love it because it's just a break away from the traditional, like, straight face. Like, if you're not, I always struggle with that because I always, like, have a load of pent-up energy before playing. And I always needed a bit of a dance. And it was, all, you know, almost like, oh, you know, are you focused on the game? And France are showing that, you know, you can do that and you can then go out and perform. That's really nice. It's nice to see a different way of doing things. And it's been working for them so far. I do think they've improved, in a French way, I suppose, roller coaster, like they always do. And I always say the one thing you can take away from the French is the fact that they're French, meaning that they're such an enigma and they could turn up with anything, especially in front of a home crowd. I think it'll be really good. Yeah, I think, you know, considering the back three that England have, oh, I don't think there's anyone in the world that can contain them. If they can kind of contain them in other parts of the pitch, then they might slow down England's attack and, you know, hold them to you know, a tighter scoreline, which actually England needs, going back to my earlier point. I hope it's like a really good, entertaining battle, but I do think England will win it.
Oh, yeah. Should be a cracker. So obviously there's World Cup qualification obviously as well on the line for the other teams. So give me your predictions for Ireland against Scotland.
Ali's favorite part of the show always.
this is a really difficult one because we played so badly at the weekend and it really depends on how they move on from it. I think that Scotland probably will come as slight favourites even though we're at home. And I hate doing this, but I'm going to go narrowly Scotland because they've got momentum. They won last weekend and I think they know how to close these games out better. But I really hope I'm wrong.
Okay, I'm going to go narrowly Ireland because of Scotland being a little bit scared of Ireland at home.
Interesting. And hopefully as well, Sam Monaghan's going to be back. as she should be back with this one, which will be a huge boost for Ireland again. We will see how it goes. Ali and Anna, thank you so much for joining me. We will be back with our final podcast of this Women's Six Nations next Monday after the final round of games. Do enjoy them. And thanks for listening.